But that's the easy part, though, right? It's the not drinking part. It's all the other shit that comes with it that is the hard part.
Welcome to the Mocktails Made Me podcast. Join your hosts, Matt and Britt, as they explore the transformative impact of reducing or eliminating alcohol. Each episode contains firsthand accounts from people who have reduced or eliminated alcohol from their life, which has resulted in launching new endeavors and reaching personal milestones. Tune in to hear these inspiring stories and the remarkable impacts of living alcohol-free and discover what the mocktails make them do.
David Rushing has been a beacon of hope and resilience in the sober community since August 12, 2022. As a dedicated sober advocate, David has made it his mission to recover out loud through community and connection. Surviving a turbulent childhood, he brings an inspiring comeback story that aims to restore hope to those who have lost it. Beyond his advocacy, David is committed to building a loving and supporting relationship with his girlfriend and takes immense pride in being a sober dad. Join us as we welcome David and dive into his remarkable journey of recovery and resilience. Hi, Dave. How are you? Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We are so excited to have you on.
Hey, Dave.
Awesome. Hey, guys. I'm stoked. Super stoked to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, this is exciting.
Yeah. So I think we'll do what we usually do and start at the beginning. So kind of tell us, I know I've talked to you a little bit before. I know you have had your journey with drinking, but some of it was came from trauma. And like, so kind of tell us like how you got involved with your drinking habits and then how they could, when they were like, oh no, these are bad, like these aren't working for me. Mm-hmm. And then kind of what that trampoline moment was where you're like, okay, I'm going to turn this shit around. It's time to turn it around, you know? Like,
sure.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, I think I started drinking. I mean, I tried my first drink at 16. I didn't dive right into it fully then. I was very hesitant about doing any sort of drinking or drugs because I was born into addiction. Both parents were addicts, and they gave me up at a young age. And then I lived with another family member who was also an addict. And that house was the start of a lot of my trauma. It was essentially like a drug house. You know, I lived with my aunt and her boyfriend, but there were people there all the time using drugs, passed out on the couches. You know, I think I was in like kindergarten and I'm like walking over people just to get to school and not a lot of food. My aunt's boyfriend that was there, he was super abusive. So it was just kind of like in my face at a really young age, you know, and it was something I never wanted to try. Like I saw the worst of it. So that wasn't going to be me, right? As I got older, you know, you get into high school or whatever and your friends are doing things. And I stayed away from it for as long as I could. And then right around the age of 16, I started, I dabbled with, I think it was gin was the first thing I ever drank. And I did 13 shots of gin, which, yeah.
Wow, just dove right in.
Yeah, yeah.
It is the worst. I threw a Halloween party once and it was beautiful. I rented a hotel and I had two rooms of the hotel, had characters. And I was like, I'm not going to drink my normal drink. I'm going to drink gin. I fell asleep in the one room that we had rented to put all our stuff and missed my big, beautiful party.
Oh, no, that's awful.
Yeah. My best memory with gin was taking shots. It tastes like a Christmas tree. And yeah. It does not taste like a Christmas tree going the other way, which is like one of my last memories of gin.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I had the 13 shots of gin and it was coming right back up. Funny enough, the house I was at, my friend, his sister was a cheerleader for the football team, and I puked in the football team's water jug that was then taken to the football game. I don't know whatever happened after that. I wasn't there, but I felt awful, right? And that should have been enough for me to never want to drink again. You know, then I dabbled with pot and hallucinogens and various other things. And started to realize, specifically with, I think, pot early on, that like there was this escape from that childhood trauma that I wasn't fully grasping was like eating me up at the time, you know, but it was like, oh wow, like I feel good. I don't have to think about anything when I'm high or drinking. As time went on, I was a teenager, a young teenager. I went to visit a childhood friend and went camping with their family. And we were in the tent, me and the young son and the father. And in the middle of the night, I woke up and the gentleman had pulled me into the sleeping bag with him and was molesting me in the middle of the night.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
Damn. Yeah, sometimes I shy away from this topic, not because I don't like talking about it, but because it was an isolated event that happened one time to me. And I know that so many others have suffered far worse.
That doesn't make your story any less detrimental. I went through a lot of childhood trauma on the same level, and yours is just as meaningful as anybody else, and it affects you just the same. And I'm very sorry you went through that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I try to give a voice to it because I feel like people hold on to those things and they should, you know, feel comfortable talking about it. But yeah, like I said, sometimes I try to shy away. But anyways, that happened, and you know, I stopped it in the middle of it, and the camping trip wasn't over. I had to make it through another night, and then it was over. I held on to that for probably about a year and ended up telling my mom, but this gentleman lived overseas and they ended up moving out of the country. Who knows what happened to him after that? I don't know. I can't help but think about his young son all the time, but so that kind of stuck with me too. You know, like I think that I've made it through some childhood trauma, then this thing happens to me and it's eating at me. And so the drinking began to escalate, I think, when I was around 19. You know, I think everything was kind of coming to a head. Like I didn't really know my biological parents. The sense of abandonment started to come out in me. Why didn't my parents want me? Being raised by my great aunt, I call my cousins, my sisters and brothers, two out of the three of them were addicts as well. So I saw that struggle often. And the drinking just became this like huge escape for me. So I started to get heavier and heavier into it. And this was at a young age. So that's kind of my excuse at the time, right? I'm young, whatever, it doesn't matter. I can do whatever I want, no big deal.
And I think also at that age, like we don't know that we're trying to numb all these things that happened to us as a child. We just think we're going along with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't register to us like, oh, I'm doing this because I'm trying to hide the shitty feeling. Like that's not like our emotional mm-hmm. intelligence, I don't think, has registered to that point. I don't know if that's your same experience, but that was mine.
Yeah, for sure. That's such a good point. Yeah, you're not really, you know, I think I'm talking more out of like the knowledge that I have now when I'm saying it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like back then, I was just the party guy. You know what I mean? Like I didn't know what I was doing. I would get a loud, funny guy, you know. So everything was fun and games back then. I dabbled with a ton of other drugs for whatever reason. I'm lucky enough that none of the other ones really stuck with me. You know, I could do whatever drug and the next day be like, I'm good. Like that made me feel like crap. But no matter how crappy alcohol made me feel the next day, I was up and be like, let's go, let's do it again. I ended up having to move out of the Bay Area. I was getting in trouble. Like the police were picking me up for drunk in public all the time. Like they knew me by name. I had to get out of my sister's house. She was raising two young kids and I was just a mess. So I moved out here to Missouri when I was 20, and I was moving in with my dad, my biological dad, who at the time I thought was sober. And I was asking him for some monetary help. And when I got here, he told me that I could just get a job and earn money and move back. So I was kind of stuck here, but not only stuck here, I thought I was moving into this house with my dad who was sober, and it turns out he was nothing even close to sober. So everything I tried to escape from
Who's there waiting for you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, next thing I know, I'm drinking all the time, smoking weed, doing coke, and all with my dad. Right. A very odd experience, you know, and that brings on other emotions of like, this is my father. Like this was my time to rekindle this relationship. And this is crazy. Yeah. This crazy mess that I'm living in. He ended up going through a divorce. I ended up moving out of his house and, you know, I'm in my mid 20s at this point. I have a job. I'm living with roommates, and that's the time of like, it doesn't matter if you get drunk and do dumb shit the next day when you wake up, it's all about like, oh, whatever, it was a good party, you know? In hindsight, I was probably getting more drunk and more blackout than my friends around me, you know? I just wasn't really realizing it because it was all jokes.
Get chaos, like when you're chaotic, the people you attract, like the person that's chill, you're not attracting that person, you know. So a lot of times your friends are getting just as fucked up as you are, because that's what the type of people that you're vibing with, and that's where your vibration is. So you surround yourself with that, because chaos loves chaos. Like a chaotic person's not going to be like, I'm not going to be hanging out with that girl dancing on the table. Like, she's a fucking shit show.
Right. That's true. Yeah. I think what you're saying is true. Like in everyday world or life, right? Like even today, that's who you attract. You know, I did that for a while, whatever. Ended up getting a job, a different job that then became my career. I'm a manager at a grocery store.
Glass foods, where is that?
Yeah. What's your, so as a someone that works at Trader Joe's, what's your favorite like Trader Joe's food or drink item?
Oh, my favorite food item that varies. I really like our fresh chicken enchiladas. They're really good.
Add that to the grocery list.
I know. We'll be going there for dinner tonight.
Yeah, I know. We love the frozen orange chicken is good. And Brittany has like a dozen of those little glass noodles dishes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right now. They're so good.
I eat those like, I eat those almost every day.
Yeah, it's the like the rectangle package.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just pop that in the microwave for like 3 or 4 minutes. And
that's my go-to. That's my go-to favorite.
Delicious.
Thing. Yeah. I like the, Japchae. Yeah. I like the mini chicken cilantro wontons. Those are really good. You can make soup with them, like put them in miso broth with some veggies. It's really good.
I haven't eaten today. And
I can keep talking about food.
Or at least pop one of those noodles in the microwave. Yeah. Sorry to
get off topic.
I love talking about food.
It's, when you work at Trader Joe's, that happens all the time. As soon as the words come out of your mouth, when I was in rehab, I said Trader Joe's, and we were literally having a session about Trader Joe's right in the middle of rehab.
Yeah, that'll be our next episode. We'll talk all about Trader Joe's, a little food hacks, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll incorporate recovery in Trader Joe's or something. I don't know.
Snacks and recovery are really important.
Yeah.
All right, funny. So you're at your grocery store, you're working at a grocery store. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm working at a grocery store, you know, I'm with a woman, we're gonna have a kid, you know, life starts to just progress, you know, she becomes my wife, I have 2 kids with her, I have a house, I'm drinking daily, but what does that matter? Because I have all of like the things I need, and I'm holding them down, and I'm being responsible, well, quote unquote responsible. Right. But still every night I'm coming home and I'm drinking, you know, 8 to 10 beers, and it's constant. I mean, this thing progressed for over 20 years. Right. I ended up, separating and getting divorced, and that is like, I think a turning point in my drinking where it got really dark in that moment, because I didn't have a home, and I was living with some friends, and I didn't really have a place to take my kids. I would get hotel rooms and have my kids over to hotel rooms, but that meant extra driving. So I was drinking and I would be driving my kids in the car. A handful of the times it was driving them while I definitely shouldn't have been driving them. Those are the things that kind of really sit heavy with me when I think back of this, like,
this final spiral before the trampoline.
Yeah. It was like a good 6-year spiral or something like that. I don't know. It was a good climb to get to where I needed to be. But, it has that chunk of time that was really, really rocky and really dark. And then things got better. You know, my girlfriend and I are together and we have a child and then we get a house and everything is seemingly like I have all the pieces, except I'm still doing the same stuff over and over and over again, still drinking nightly. And that just began to progress, especially the final year I was drinking. It became a lot of, or final 2 years of drinking, it became a lot of like my day off. So then I would wake up and I would go to drop the kids off at school. And I would tell my girlfriend like, oh, I'm gonna go pick up breakfast for us. But I'd go to the bar that I know that wakes up, that opens up early, and I'd have a drink, maybe a couple shots, just while I'm, you know, quote unquote, getting breakfast. And I'd get a good buzz going in the morning and I'd kind of chill out and sober up, you know, then I'd have to get the kids and all that and then start the whole routine all the way over again. I was super moody all the time. I would find ways to get angry just so I could have the excuse of it being a shitty day, or I'm mad at my girlfriend, or the kids are too much, or whatever it is. You know, I could pull them out of thin air just to have a reason to drink and drink heavy. I would try to say I wasn't going to drink on the weekends, and then I'd be like, oh, today sucked, you know, so I'm going to go ahead and drink in it. And it was always consistent with the amount I was drinking. People that say like they needed a beer after work, I don't even understand. It doesn't even register into my brain how you could have one beer. That's just
what I mean. One six pack?
I think that's very genetic.
Right.
When it comes to that, like my mom's an addict. Mm-hmm. And so when she was pregnant, she was still abusing alcohol and drugs. Mm. And so I think like that messes with our DNA. So when mm-hmm. we're born, we already have that genetic disposition to want drugs more.
Sure.
So it's like, I call myself like tequila Pac-Man because the second I can have one, but if I have two, you're going to give me 15 because like I can't stop. And my brain's like, mm-hmm. I need more. I don't understand like, oh, having a few sips of a couple beers and then there's no stop.
Yeah. And I was that guy too, that was always like, if we're out, let's do another round of shots. And it's funny because my life after rehab and thinking back, when you're that person, it's not like a social thing. Like I'm trying to gather people to do shots for a social event. I'm just trying to do it to make myself feel better. Right. Like
if they're going
to, right. Yeah. If they're going to do the shots with me, then it's okay. Right. In that moment though, I just thought I was the fun guy. I just like to turn up and have a good time. But then I also used to tell myself that I didn't hide the drinking. And now I can admit that I have like selfies of me taking fireball shots in my bathroom by myself. You know, I think I just posted one of a Southern Comfort shot today. So it's a lot of reflecting of like, yeah, I was hiding my drinking, or I would go to the gas station and pick up my six pack. And then I'd also buy two shots of Fireball and I'd have those gone before I even got back to the house, you know? So it just progressed and it progressed. The thing that was really making my turning point was the dysfunction in my relationship. I was creating a lot of problems there as far as arguments and if I was mad, the whole house was going to know I was mad. You know, I'm storming out of the house. I'm slamming doors. There's moments where I was super over the top mad, where like I threw a cupcake across the room and I could just see like my daughter's face at how upset she was at seeing that, you know. But the next day it was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get that upset. Won't happen again. And then it would happen again, right? All leading up to these like final three events. I went to a wedding, made an ass out of myself at a wedding. I went out of town and it was a 3.5 hour drive both ways. Both ways I drove the whole way, drinking the whole time. I don't know how I made it to and from, honestly. And up until the final night, I made an excuse to get upset with my girlfriend, got super mad at her and called out of work, woke up, started day drinking, went all the way through the day, ended up at a bar at night. They didn't want to let me leave. They told me they were going to call me an Uber. I didn't want the Uber. They said they were going to call the cops. So I took the Uber, obviously, and I don't have the correct address on my ID. So they ended up taking me to the wrong house. And the Uber driver didn't want to take me back home. So I passed out in the lawn and my girlfriend had to use location to find me. She had to take an Uber to get me. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and she's standing over me. And in that moment, when I locked eyes with her at 3 in the morning, I knew something had to change. You know, I can't be a 43-year-old man passed out in the front lawn while my kids are at home because my girlfriend has to come and pick me off the grass, right? So whatever was different in that moment, I don't know what made everything click right there, but I just know that when I locked eyes with her, that was the turning point for me. Woke up the next day and told my son that, or I picked up my son from football. He looked at me, he said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I need to get help with my drinking." And he put his hand on my back and said, "It's going to be okay, Dad. It's going to be okay." And he's 13 at this point. It was like such a pivotal moment for me. And came home, told, he was the first person I told too. I hadn't even told my girlfriend yet at this point that I needed help. Told my girlfriend, told the rest of my family. I'm fortunate enough to have a ton of support and a good job with great insurance. And within 4 hours, I was on a plane to California going to rehab.
Well, good for you for doing that and turning it around. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was, scary as shit to make that decision. And then when it's happening in real time, your brain is trying to tell you like, no, you don't need to do that. Come on, you know? But yeah, it was huge. I'll come into that one choice that I didn't know was going to lead me to where I am today, you know?
Had you had like similar instances where you had considered doing that 180 and this was like the final like push that you needed to make that change?
Oh, sure. I can't even tell you how many times I had tossed the idea around of either quitting drinking or moderating my drinking. You know, I wanted to just drink on the weekends, or I just didn't have that in me to moderate. I don't think that was ever going to be possible. But if I had a day off of drinking, I would tell myself like, oh, see, you could do it. You have one day off. You know, I would try to do dry January. I think I completed it once. But so many times, and yeah, leading up to that point, it became more of a thing where like I was trying to get healthier. You know, I would try to exercise and drink because then that made me feel like, I guess I'm earning it or whatever. I don't know. Made me feel better about having it. But yeah, so many times I said I was going to get help. And I think even leading up to it, probably maybe the last 6 months, I had thrown the idea around with my girlfriend. Like, if I can't do this on my own, I'll probably just have to get help. And threw that out there like loosely, but we didn't really have like a big talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. But then in the second that it like left my mouth, I knew I had to stick to it. When I was on the phone with the people that were buying me the plane ticket, they told me that they could get me a plane ticket in a couple days. And I said, okay, that's cool. And I got off the phone. I look at my girlfriend. I'm like, hey, they said we can get me a ticket in 2 days. And she shot me a look. And I knew that look meant like, you're not going to go if you don't do this. And I was like, okay, yeah, right. So I called them back and they're like, can you be at the airport in 2 hours? I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah.
Then you go to rehab and you come back, and I've been wanting to talk to you about this because you have said like recovering your way. You've talked about that before. And I really, I like that because everybody's journey is so different and there isn't just one way to recover. I know for me, for instance, like I, during 2020, during the pandemic, I did try to read the AA books, but they just weren't for me. They actually made me kind of relapse because they were so depressing. Sad. So I had, I didn't resonate with that, but I didn't until I decided to get sober with Matt. I didn't really know there was like sober Instagram. I didn't know there was other people recovering any other way. And so I'd like to kind of hear your thoughts on your journey with that and how you kind of came to that idea of what like recovering your way.
Yeah, you nailed it, right? Like when I was in rehab, I thought AA was the only way to do it. We went to AA meetings 5 days a week, and I could have sworn I was in strictly a AA rehab facility until I went to one of the AA meetings there, and I didn't like how pushy they were on me. Like I'm this newcomer who's fragile, and they were like really like pushing me to talk, and I just didn't like that vibe. It didn't sit with me well. I ended up talking to my counselor in rehab and asked him what his thoughts were, and he was like, he was 11 or 12 years sober at the time, and he had never gone to one AA meeting ever. He's like, that's not for me. You know, I don't go. He's like, you have one rule in this thing, and that rule is don't drink. He's like, who cares how you get there after that? And that really resonated with me. You know, I was like, yeah, like, that's a good point. Like, I just have to not drink. And, you know, all the other recovery tools come with it, which are awesome. But so I came home and I didn't really know what to do, though. When you're in rehab, you make this recovery plan. And like you said, there's not a lot of options. So my recovery plan was go to AA because I didn't know what to do. So I went to AA pretty solid, like almost every day for 3 months. And there's parts of AA that I like. I really like community and talking to people, you know, like that part's super cool. Or like after the meeting, when you're shooting the shit with people, vibing with them, that's cool. What I don't like, and at least from my experience with AA, is I got a lot of like, there's only one cookie cutter way to do it. Like you have to get a sponsor. You have to follow the 12 steps. And that I never had a sponsor. I never got a sponsor. I remember when I got my 3 month coin, the guy that gave it to me wouldn't let up. He hugged me and gave it to me, but he was like, you need to get a sponsor. And then like kept coming up to me. You got to get a sponsor. You got to get a sponsor. I was like, dude, like I don't need to do anything. Right.
Like,
yeah. I'm like, really?
Stranger danger.
Yeah. I'm supposed to just get this sponsor and dive all in with it. I don't know. It just was a weird vibe, really pushy. And I didn't like that. Maybe it's the meetings I was going to. I don't know. I know it is a great resource for some people, which is awesome. Like I'm never going to knock anybody's recovery. So if it works for them, that's rad. It just wasn't my thing.
It's very niche into the way that it works. Like you have, it's very immersed into religion. It's very immersed into you having to talk. And my whole thing is, I quit alcohol, so I didn't feel chained to anything. Like I wanted to be free. Mm-hmm. And telling me I need to go to meetings, telling me I have to check in with somebody, telling me I have to do all these things that are like what I feel like putting me in like a jail. That's not for me personally. Like, and I know people really like to have those things to show up for and the person to call, and it gets people from A to sobriety a good amount of time. But for me, I'm just like, I want to just do my thing.
Oh, for sure. And one of the biggest things for me was, and this is where I can probably get some flack from people, but one of the biggest things for me was, you want me to admit that I'm powerless over alcohol? Like that's not coming out of my mouth. That's never going to come out of my mouth. I'm more powerful than, and I'm going to continue to be more powerful than, and continue to prove I'm more powerful than. Like that just won't happen for me. It doesn't even register in my brain. My dad is an AA person, and I had that chat with him, and he was trying to like wrap my head around it. And I'm like, no, dad, not happening. It's not, I'm not going to say that. So that was another thing that really like was not sitting well with me. I tried another meeting. What was it called? Oh God, I'm going blank. There was this other program that I went to the meeting once, but that was kind of like going backwards. It was like, they were giving me tools like how to open a bank account or whatever. You know what I mean? Like I was like, no.
All the things that you're already doing.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, no, that's not for me. So
I'm more of a how to adult.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I ended up on a bunch of apps that were out there. I think I downloaded them all, you know, and one of them was called Quit Drinking, and I was posting daily on there just how my day was that day. It was kind of like a journal for me, and I was getting like a lot of good feedback from it. And I met someone on there that was like, you should share your story. You should share your story. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'll share my story. And so I started a DJ Sober Shorts, my Instagram, and Facebook. I started a TikTok.
I actually thought you were a DJ.
I'm waiting to ask that question.
I thought you were a DJ that like DJed and was sober for a while.
Yeah, I get that all the time, and it didn't even register when I was coming up with the name. My middle name is Jay, so it's DJ Rushing, which is, I didn't think about it at the time, and now in hindsight, I'm like, I'm not a DJ, but it sure sounds like I'm one. So I started sharing, and it was cool. Like, it was like a release, like getting things off my chest. And then I started to meet people that were recovering kind of like similar to me. Like AA wasn't for them, so they were trying to find this other angle. And the angle was community. You know, when I didn't know what a community was, you know, before this. Never been a part of a community. And now I'm like super proud when I say that I'm part of the sober community or the recovery community. And it brought this whole new level to recovery. Like there's people that do it a million different ways, right? And just seeing stories and people that had similar paths and we're all have the same goal and cheering each other on and not shaming anybody for doing it differently, right? It's okay. And it all brings me back to what my counselor said. The only rule is not to drink. And after that, it's okay. Whatever it takes to get there, you know.
It's kind of an easy game if that mm-hmm. works. Like, there's one rule, and you just, as long as you don't do that, you can do all the other fun stuff. You know, like life gets really good, and everything's open to you.
For sure, my counselor was like very like simple, so he would like simplify things for me. You know, he's like, you don't like the way it makes you feel, don't do it. It's messing up your life, don't do it. He's like, I don't know what else to tell you. You just don't drink. Which in theory sounds easy, right? But that's the easy part though, right? Is the not drinking part. It's all the other shit that comes with it that is the hard part. I think people that don't understand recovery think that we just set down a glass and don't touch it and that's it, piece of cake. And that's just not accurate at all.
I think especially when it comes from trauma, your drinking comes from trauma, it adds like, because I know like my first 3 months, I didn't like, well, I also cold turkeyed Adderall that my doctor was over prescribing me at the same time. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
So I was like the Walking Dead for about the first 3 months. But then the next 3 months, all the emotions came in and all my like insecurities started like creeping up.
Mm-hmm.
And then like after 6 months, I started to kind of feel like a human again. But I think once you get past all that, the first, it sounds like a long period of time, but it's really just two seasons is how I look mm-hmm. at it. You have the rest of your life to feel really good. Like, I don't feel anymore like it's one day at a time because this is my really cool life I live.
Mm-hmm. That's such a good way to look at it. I love that.
And I hate that word, one day at a time, because I feel like it makes people think like they're never going to get to a point where they don't have to, like, they're going to always be like, oh, the alcohol bully is going to come get me. But it's not always like that.
Yeah. One day becomes 1 week, becomes 1 month, becomes one season, becomes 1 year quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. What I do like about the one day at a time, and I don't like a lot of the cliche shit that is said, I try to stay away from it. But what I do like about it is when you're starting off, you're thinking like, I quit this thing forever. right? And forever is like daunting. Like, are you kidding me? Forever, what? So when you simplify that to like, I just got to make it through today and then I'll worry about tomorrow, you know? But I like the way that you worded that for sure.
Yeah, I think it's great in the beginning. Like, it absolutely is. That's kind of like a better way to look at it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it needs to be talked about more, that it's not going to be one day at a time forever.
Yeah, yeah. Like today, I'm not like, oh man, I just got to make it to today. Like, I don't think like that now, but back then I definitely did. And back then, like, rehab's great and all, but you're not equipped for life after rehab. You know, when I came home, it was hard work, especially for that first, like, I don't know, 90 days, 6 months was really, really tough. And, you know, my girlfriend, who doesn't have any of these issues with drinking or whatever, got the brunt of it all over again, life after recovery, right? She got the worst of me when I was drinking. And then I come back home and I'm supposed to be like, quote unquote, better. And she's getting this other shit side of me that, like, I'm still using the same tactics. Like, I'm still blaming her for shit, right? If she wants to go out with her family and have like a drink, I'm throwing the temper tantrum about it. Like, oh, you don't even understand what it's like in my shoes. You're going to make me drink now. And, you know, throwing like idle threats out there and stuff, just because I'm trying to figure myself out, but I'm trying to put the heat on her, you know? So I don't know. I'm lucky that she's stood by my side. She was put through the ringer.
We're going to give
she
her
is.
A round of applause.
Yeah, she is. And something we talked about before and we just revisited a couple days ago is the moment, that last day that I was drinking, I was awful, said awful things to her, right? And what I didn't know then was she was done with our relationship. But then I wake up the next morning and I'm like, I'm going to rehab. So she has to take all those emotions she has and bottle them and become my support system, right? And that took me a long time to sink in that she did that, to be able to like have that aha moment of like, holy shit, I never even talked to you about your feelings. What the hell, you know? And to be able to give back to her, I don't know when we had that moment, but let her have that moment to be able to let it out and tell me how she was really feeling through that time too. You know, there was a time when I got back from rehab where I didn't think we were going to make it. And we've done a lot of work to get to where we are. And we're better than we ever been. You know, it's pretty, pretty awesome where we're at now, but she's been through a lot, and to still support me, I'm super appreciative of it. I'm lucky.
Yeah. I love that you're self-aware to understand that though, too. That I think that's really big. To be self-aware, to know that you put someone through something and that now it's like her kind of time to heal a little bit also.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a couple more questions for you.
Go for it.
Question one, if somebody was in like the same shoes you were right when you were spiraling, what would be one piece of advice you'd give them? Like, if you could just give them one piece to kind of help give them their little push towards their trampoline, what would it be?
Oh man, that's such a good question and such a difficult question. Cause I feel like when I was spiraling, if I got pushed, I would have kept spiraling. You know what I mean? It's such a, and I've had this question from people that are spiraling, and it's really, really tricky to navigate, right? Cause you could send somebody the other direction really easy. I tend to just let people know that I'm here for them, to listen. Like, I don't have judgment on them. I let them know that I understand. I've been in that position. I know what it's like to ride the line of should I or shouldn't I. And I know that that comes with a lot of shame and guilt, and that while some of their actions may not be okay, it's okay to be struggling with these battles of trying to fix yourself, you know. And I let them know, like, you can't fix yourself while you're actively drinking. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I'll let them know resources, you know, like here's resources that you can use, to whether it's finding a rehab or something like that. But, you know, it's true that it can't be forced on anybody, right? Somebody has to really, really want to do the work, or however they want to do it, go to rehab, stop drinking, So I just try to let people know that there's support there and I'm here, and I'm, whenever they're ready, I'm going to be here, you know?
I love that. So the next question. So the mocktails made me do it. It's kind of a play on words, like tequila made me do it. So like tequila made me dance on a table, but the mocktail made you do the opposite. Mm-hmm. What did the mocktail make you do?
The mocktail made me become a better father, a better partner, a better listener, a better communicator. And I feel like it, I tell people all the time, like, I feel like I had this superpower that I didn't even know I had until I quit drinking. And it's just like my connection with people. I can say hi to somebody and just in their eyes, I know that they need somebody to talk to. And more often than not, I'll find out that that person just started recovery or wants to know about recovery, has trauma that they haven't talked about that they want to talk about. I don't know how or where it comes from, but I just feel like I'm really in tune with people now. And it's a gift, you know?
I love that.
Yeah, that's good. Alcohol has so many negative impacts that when you remove it, like everything just starts to bloom.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Like your spidey senses.
Yeah. I think the same way, like I was saying, chaos, you attract chaos when you're chaotic. When you're healing and you're at a higher vibe, you also attract things that are meant for you. Like you vibe with that and it brings it to you. Now that you're in a healing state and becoming healed, you can feel other people needing to heal.
Yeah. I think when you start to know the ways of the force or whatever, like you want to spread that to people too, you know, like when you're on this side of things, it's hard to explain to people that like you can get here, you can get to this moment.
We're the Jedi.
Yeah, totally.
It's like a completely different perspective on life, because when you remove like the alcohol goggles, the beer goggles or whatever, when you take those off, like everything just colors are brighter, everything's more fun, you can connect with people better.
Then I start, like now when I look at things, I'm like, I look at like society's role in things and I'm like, oh, why is alcohol involved in that thing? You know, like I'll go to one of my kids' functions and I'm like, why is there a beer tent at a carnival? Yeah, a soccer game or whatever. I'm like, why is that even here? Why was I drinking at this event? You know, it's unusual.
Our culture is messed up.
That's why. A good next podcast, alcohol's integration into American society.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do one on prohibition.
Oh yeah, that'll be good.
The history that led up to it happening, and then why it got taken away, and the number one reason is that our government wanted tax dollars.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, it's all about money for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure, it's I don't know, it's everywhere, and it's so bad for you. Yet it's never like there's not a lot of rules against it. You just got to be 21 and then have at it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as you want, whenever you want, just don't drive.
Yeah. Yeah. And how often have you been at a bar where you see the bartender actually be like, well, I'm not going to let you drive, or I'm not going to pour you another drink? Like, it doesn't happen often. I've been that guy that kept getting the drinks that shouldn't have had drinks.
Oh, when I was a cocktail waitress, we had to get people's fingerprints so that they could say they were there, and they would be shit-faced and we'd be just pressing their thumb down.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
That they were sober enough.
The fingerprint?
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Fingerprint it and then make them sign. So it looked like that was like their double check that they were sober enough to sign their bill. And they'd be like passed out and we'd be like,
right.
Their arm.
Oh, that's wild.
Because some of these bills are like $500,000.
Holy shnikes. Mm-hmm. That's I guess it's Vegas. Were you born and raised?
Any bill over 10 grand, we had to get a thumbprint.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Anyway,
that probably happens really easy in Vegas too, though. But that kind of bill.
Yeah, and that's not including the 20% auto grat and the 20% gratuity that goes on, because there's entertainment gratuity or tax. There's entertainment tax, regular tax, and alcohol tax.
Huh. Oh man, that's wild.
Could go save a small country, but we'll drink.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's yeah. The amount of money is crazy.
All right, well, we're gonna wrap this up. It was so good to have you on, and I hope to have you on here again. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I was so stoked for this. This is awesome.
Yeah, it really was. Like, your story was really good. It was so happy to have you on here.
Thank you. Yeah, anytime. I love this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so we talked about your Instagram handle, DJ Sober Shorts. Mm-hmm. Where else can people find you if they need to connect or, you know, need to talk to you about their, you know, like what you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, that's really my best platform. I have, with the same handle, I have a Facebook page as well. DJ Sober Shorts. But I tried a TikTok and I'm awful at TikTok. I couldn't get down with it.
Yeah, I think I try. I put some stuff on there if I like download it from my Instagram over, but nothing. So I will be linking all of that stuff in the notes. So all you guys have to do is click on the link and it will take you to his pages. If you're interested in talking to him, go follow him, say hello to him, all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Mocktails Made Me podcast. We truly appreciate your support. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, subscribe, and share to help spread the word about the rewarding benefits of reducing or eliminating alcohol. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Mocktails Made Us for more updates and exclusive content. Join us next time for more inspiring stories and remarkable impacts of living alcohol-free. Discover what the mocktails can make possible. Oh.